on. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and we're going to have a really great show today. We are focused. We're blessed to have the commander of the base of Pacific Missile Range facility in here with a number of citizens who have questions that they would like to see on the environmental impact statement. So it's going to be a lively show. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man. And so we really support our underwriters, and we're happy with them, and Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
G-Love, one night only on Kauai. Dove presents G-Love Solo Acoustic Foot Stomping Street Side Blues Throwdown. Love Saves the Day Hawaii Tour. December 29th, Church of the Pacific, all ages, Princeville, Kauai. One night only. Pre-sale tickets at www.dovepresents.com. More information at 808-635-5556. One night only, G-Love on Kauai, Church of the Pacific, December 29th.
This Friday, December 18th, the Princeville Wine Market will be celebrating their five-year anniversary in style with a sparkling wine and champagne tasting at Princeville Center. Wine will be poured to those 21 and older from
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So I'm going to make sure I got everybody mic'd up in here okay. Our topic today is the Navy's Environmental Impact Statement on the Hawaii Southern California Training and Testing. So with gratitude, we have Pacific Missile Range Facilities Commander Captain Bruce Hay. Let's hear if you're on there.
Aloha.
There you go. And I want to thank you for coming in and having this show. I also have John Berger, who's a biologist, a chemist, and an environmental scientist with substantial experience in environmental cleanup. He's also a former Vietnam vet and currently with 13 years in environmental safety at Pacific Missile Range Facility.
Aloha.
There you are. So we will be hearing from them first, but we have several different people who are bringing up issues that they would really like to see explored deeply in this environmental impact statement. Stephen Doy, you're a fisherman and a lifelong Hanapepe resident. Is that correct?
Yes, Felicia.
Yeah. You also happen to be a fire captain. But so that causes me to ask you, are you a commercial fisherman or a recreational fisherman?
I'm a recreational fisherman.
Okay. And what fish do you go after?
Well, we go after deep sea bottom fishing mostly. We do some trolling. I used to do diving in my younger years. I still do it, not as much.
Okay, all right. So anyway, you are out there. Actually, do you ever go out to Ka'ula or?
We do a lot of not too much fishing, and maybe 6-7 times a year, weather permitting. Not as much. Like I said, we don't do commercial fishing.
Okay. But so you're trying to get an idea for how far out you go.
Oh, we go all the way out around Niihau.
Okay. And I have Terry Lilly. You're a marine environmental researcher and filmmaker, logging a tremendous amount of hours, actually, in the water. Do I have that correct?
Actually, I have a degree in biology, and specifically marine biology, with over 30,000 hours in the ocean. And I've logged in about 1,500 scuba dives doing coral reef survey work throughout Kauai over the last 5 years.
Okay, and then I have two people who are strong whale advocates, Kalasara, and I always want to call you Golden Eagle because you are, that's what you go by in the other show, so I don't say your name right, but it's Makea, correct? And you can just say yes, hi, on his thing for right now.
Hello.
There she is. Okay, so we have a number of people in here, and I have to say that this show is one of those that has brought me just an avalanche of resources that people that are probably listening have shared. So it's almost an overwhelming amount of information. So I'm going to own it that I'm relying on my guests to really help strengthen this knowledge. So I want to welcome you, Commander, and I want to honor a few of the positives. I don't want to say it's limited to that, but I really don't have a military background. My dad was in World War II, but that's kind of like how far it goes, and that was before I was around. But one of the biggest things that left an impression on me was how helpful the military were after the hurricane. You weren't here then, but you're shaking your head, but you have to say no. But they were absolutely hero around here. I have toured the base. I went, maybe even almost a year ago.
It was before the elections. You were with me, so it was like October of last year or so.
Yeah, okay, that's right. So thank you for having me bring there, and I want to say that I went and I was looking relative to complaints and concerns that people have said and had about what happens out there. And I didn't see anything that would show installation of nuclear weapons. I mean, that was something, because at least I know you say you can't confirm or deny, but it doesn't have much of a fence if that's the case. In these things that people have sent me, I saw that there was a pretty good list of awards and recognitions of that you guys have gotten. Among those is 2010, 12, 14, Natural Resources Conservation and House of Representatives, Stewardship of the Land and Strong Community Involvement. The county council, the Senate, different people have given you good cultural resource management and a lot of recognition on that. So I just want to be able to acknowledge that. When I was on the base, I saw that there was an effort to really take care of the birds, the turtles. I've been a long time ago in where I heard the hydrophones recording the whales or, announcing when they were there, the whales announced themselves. And I was, in some of the stuff that was sent to me, I was kind of stunned at the sizable funding that comes to contractors, particularly Native Hawaiian organizations that offer services on the base, like hundreds of millions of dollars, where, shockingly high amount of money that goes out to contractors. And I have all this stuff is on Facebook, so people can look there and we'll go in there. The other thing I want to just say that I observed was clear evidence of recycling targets and equipment whenever possible. Some of this stuff looked actually 20, 30 years old. Maybe it wears out earlier than it seems like. But I did see the recovery of pieces, helicopters going out. So I'm just saying I did go out. So I wanted to begin this dialogue with saying things that I've seen that are positive. I will also say that having gone to the public outreach meeting, there's probably 2 or 3 to 1 people from the base and the civilian support to the amount of people who got there. So it didn't get really published enough, but there were a lot of really nice people all doing good things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to say thank you over, pointing out positives right off the bat. This scoping effort is done in multiple different locations. And as a point of reference, in San Diego, they had 8 people, major metropolitan area. Here we had 20, and I attribute that partly because when you were there, you went live on, and we actually got more people to show up. We'll talk about all the ways to get your input in because it's really important. And, we'll do everything we can. We're never going to get the word out to everyone, and, I regret that. But when we're done here today, it'll be abundantly clear how to be pushed updates and how to see all the reference material. And there's thousands of pages. So, again, thank you for going on air and getting some more people to show up.
Yeah, next time, call us early. We'll make sure that room is crowded.
All right, fair enough.
Because it should be crowded because it's really significant, the impact that happens with war and practice for war. I want to thank the people in the military who might be listening, that they really make a lot of personal sacrifice in terms of keeping America safe in general. I'm not a proponent of war, but I
That makes two of us.
Okay. So, it's your turn. Tell us, you might have some ideas of what people are concerned about. Like, I like to go right to where the impacts are. When I went into that meeting, I don't have enough knowledge to be able to see what I was being shown. I was being shown how these animals are being protected, but I didn't really honestly understand what that protection was from. So, like, if you could put it into context.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I want to say at the beginning for those of your listeners who are not driving and listening in the car, you can get to the internet, hstteis.com. That's a Hawaii and Southern California Training and Test Environmental Impact Study. That's the website that you can enter your comments. It has all the reference materials. It has the current EIS, which dates to 2013, and as a point of reference, get a good pot of coffee because just one chapter on marine mammals is 394 pages. So you're going to be there a while. But on the when you come up on that page on the left side on the bottom, you'll see subscribe. It asks for a first, last name and an email, and that's it. And then they'll push you updates. And we can go over the calendar here later. But when you came to the Hawaii and Southern California Training and Test Environmental Impact Study scoping meeting, the idea was to have an opportunity for the public to come and have a dialogue with lawyers, environmentalists, operators such as myself, and hear what's going on in the process, perhaps learn about things that you're concerned about, and then have an opportunity to write comments. You can enter online. You could also make auditory comments on a recorder. But we still want to hear what you have to say, so that's why I'm going to push that website multiple times. I know you're going to roll your eyes at by the end of this and go, oh, my goodness, I get it, hstteis.com. I get it. So you're more than willing to throw something at me at the end, right? So I know the question's in everyone's mind. Do we have to train to do what we do? Yes. Are we a military service that does that on the water? Yes. Does what we do while we're training, and if we did ultimately have to defend our nation, does that have impact on things in the water? Yes. Are we doing what we can to mitigate that and then some? Absolutely. And that's where is where the discussion's going to go on. I want people to understand that it's valuable to hear what you have to say. Think of all the mechanisms that we do on the course of a normal day where someone said, I think there's a better way to do this. Have you thought about pick something? And that's good. Scrutiny is good. So I want to make sure that the overwhelming takeaway, besides a website, is that we value your input. I mean, I'm an American. I'm a citizen like everybody else here. I have a 14-month-old daughter who I want to be able to see the same things I saw when I was a kid. That's, if you take nothing away, please take that away. So let's talk about some of the things we do to protect the environment just when we're not training. We just finished the shearwater nesting season, and if you've had the pleasure of hearing them at night, they're pretty vocal. But from the middle of September to the middle of December, We institute a program called Dark Skies, which has been implemented across all Navy installations in the state of Hawaii. And have you been on the west side at night?
Yes, and I because Kilauea, I live right next to the lighthouse, we also have a dark sky. We have no streetlights in there.
It's dark, and we made it even darker, which I'm hoping will yield a secondary benefit that my electric bill will go down because, again, we're a steward of the resources that the taxpayer gives us, and anything I can do to minimize that. And, by the way, protect the animals that are around us at the same time is, you know, a win-win. It's also albatross season, and we're just in the Garden Isle again to talk about albatross translocation. Now, one of the accolades you mentioned was the state of Hawaii recognized a base, and when we were on our way over on a normally scheduled training flight, we had an albatross chick in the airplane with us, and while we were getting ready to load, you know, one of our other team members shows up, and the albatross chick is inside of a dog crate and surrounded by just unbelievable amount of egg crate and cushions and other things, which I thought was to make it a nice comfy ride for this bird. And it was actually for sound attenuation, because if they get disturbed, they vomit, and everybody knows what albatrosses eat, so the last thing you want to smell is that. I'm happy to report we got over there for the presentation by the state of Hawaii. The albatross chick had evidently enjoyed its flight, and our airplane was vomit-free. I can't make this up, but it's true, so I'm pretty proud of that. And we found, because this will be our second year, that the albatross chicks that have been translocated are thriving because they're being fed by hand, and birds that go to sea might not come back with fish, or they pick up debris that's in the ocean. So we're actually giving these birds a head start. The only downside is they're going to go back to where they were born, so eventually we won't see albatrosses at PMRF, and that's a good thing in some regards because they're a hazard to airplanes, and nobody benefits when that happens. Let's see, turtles you mentioned. This was the first year that we can remember where we had turtles hatch. There were six different nests that yielded turtle, and 468 actually survived and made it to the ocean. I have no idea how many of them will come back, but the fact that there were six discrete nests on the beach there told me that the turtles obviously felt good enough about coming ashore there. And I can't back up with numbers, but I can tell you that the amount of monk seals that I've seen this year has changed over the last two, because we get calls and people come out and look at the tags. And I'm not sure who came up with the term cookie cutter shark bite, but if a shark bite is so round, common as to be cookie cutter, that always makes me laugh. But so that's some of the things that we're doing outside of training. But what I know people are interested in is what are we doing in the water?
Right. And I know, like, I sent you a list of concerns because, I'm happy to be saying the things that you're doing right. And I think it's good if the people hear you talk about that you understand what they feel like, you know, is an area of concern.
So it is humpback whale season, and you can obviously see them all over the island, to include the west side. So how does that impact what we do when we train? Because we will put ships to sea. They come over from Oahu or from California on their way, or from the Western Pacific on their way back for training and other things. So if you are going to train in an area where you know that there's marine mammals, you have protocols that you have to follow called preventative measures assessment protocol. So before you were going to transmit sound, which is sonar, if you were going to put anything in the water, explosive or not, et cetera, you have to understand the environment you're going to put them in. There's lookouts. There's distances that will cause you to stop doing what you're doing. And not only do we enforce that on the United States services, but last November, right before Thanksgiving, we had that Japanese defense ship Terazuki come out. We train allied nations as well. So Japan, a nation that still actively whales, were out training with us, and they shut down three times during So in our training exercises, because of the presence of whales. So I just want people to understand that we take it seriously, and it doesn't matter where you're from. These are the rules, and we're going to make people follow them, and that's a great example.
And I was looking at the sonar images. You had, like, a charrette, and you could look, and I really didn't have the science background to get and understand how far and how impacting is the sonar. I could see that it was definitely there. How often is the sonar utilized? It's utilized pretty much all around Kauai. Is that correct?
The only place that we use it, and you can actually look this up, if you were to go to National Geospatial Agency, NGA, which actually goes by another name now, and ask for chart 19387, it's the Barking Sands Tactical Underwater Range South. It'll show all of our ranges geographically. It's an unclassified chart.
So I wrote it down because I will look. 19387, but that's NG. What was that?
National Geospatial Agency. They were known as NGA. They do all mapping.
It's National Geospatial Agency. Okay.
NGA. They go by a different name now, but okay. That's 19387. So Barking Sands Tactical Underwater Range South. It shows all of our ranges that have hydrophones in them. Now, I do not have any equipment at PMRF that transmits active sonar. It's listening only. So, and that's the only place that ships that train with us would be using sonars in those ranges, because in those ranges, which are indicated on those charts, are hydrophones, which we use to figure out where people are. And then afterwards, you go out and you debrief, and you use the information that the hydrophones gives you, and it shows you where you were, what you did, et cetera, and use it for training. So
the sonar is used out in the sea when they're doing these exercises, though, and it's in those ships, correct? Like they are sticking it out, too?
So ships, when they use it, there's two types of sonar. There's passive, okay, which you use about 99.9% of the time, which is listening. And then there's active, which is when you
are emitting a sound?
Correct.
Okay.
And the active sonar is used at the end of an engagement to localize. But the flip side of finding something is you tell everyone where you are. So if you're actually worried about being in an area where you're at risk because there are other forces, you're not going to do things to highlight your position. And as soon as you hit transmit on sonar, you tell everyone where you're going. The example I like to use is you're sneaking into your house after curfew when you're a kid. You're listening, which is passive sonar.
Right.
The second you stub your toe and yell, everybody knows where you are, right?
Right.
Same concept.
So, and I don't know, maybe 10 years back, I can't remember exactly when, but there was like what we called a boom box. It was the sound that was put out to measure the warming of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a very vibrant experience where there was 139, I don't know how they got that number, but that's what they said, melonhead whales that mm-hmm. beached themselves in Hanalei Bay. Is that boom box still booming? Are you guys still using that?
I don't have anything that even remotely...
Okay, and Kalasara's shaking her head no, so...
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
She went no. Okay, well, it was an impacting thing. It was on the front page of the papers for a while.
If you're looking at sound in the ocean, anything transmits sound. We'll talk about some things later, I think, that, you know, there's... I pulled this off the Navy's website today, how many ships there actually are in the Navy. It's 272
ships in the Navy?
Yep. So if you go to the Navy.mil website and go to About, it'll tell you exactly how many ships are in the Navy. 272. 30 of those are deployed. 40 of them are underway doing local operations. So of those 272 ships, 70 of them are underway right now. Now,
okay,
if you go and look up, have you used Flight Tracker before, you know, to see if someone's coming into the airport?
Yeah.
Well, there's a system on ships called Automated Identification System. It's similar to the transponders on airplanes. You can go to Maritime Tracker and look at all the ships that are transmitting this signal globally. And I'll give you a hint. There's a lot more than 70 ships plying the oceans right now. Navy ships are designed to be quiet because we don't want people to be able to locate us using passive sonar, right? There's no incentive in a commercial entity to do the same things. So one thing I would encourage people to do is look at the International Maritime Organization and look at the non-binding legislation that was passed to reduce ambient noise produced by shipping by 10 decibels. That's quite a bit.
So okay.
I want you to be aware of how cognizant we are of other sources of sound in the water because it helps us do our mission, and we want to be as quiet as possible.
And I got a handful of things today. I've looked at this over smart meters and cell phones, and you see that I have very old technology because...
Is that a flip phone?
Yes, because I have learned about EMF, electromagnetic field, and how this can be damaging to our brains. My sons, who are too old to have me tell them what to do, they have the modern phones, the iPhone 6 or whatever, something like that, you know, the high-impact phones. And I've been reading about the EMF and microwave damage. Are you guys emitting anything with EMF or microwave into the ocean that could be hurting the reef or other life?
So I'm not an expert on electromagnetic fields, and nor is John. But do we have radio equipment and radars? Absolutely. And one of the things that we are worried with, you know, we talked about one of the secondary benefits earlier of our Dark Skies program for birds is hoping to save money on electricity. Everyone who lives in Kauai knows how expensive electricity is. I don't get a cut rate on my bill because I'm the government. So we only turn things on when we need it. I can tell you from practical experience as an electronic countermeasure officer in the EA-6B, where we used the airplane to jam electronic communications and radars, where my radars are physically located and where people are concerned about coral damage, there's no physical way for the radar energy to get through a mountain. You've used a microwave oven before, right?
Yes.
So a magnetron creates that energy. It's a 2450 megahertz. Magnetrons are in radars. Have you ever looked inside the microwave to see if your food's cooking?
I actually barely use them, but
I'm sure people who are listening to us have. So why can you do that safely?
You mean when you open the door?
No, before you even open the door. You have a window in your microwave.
Yeah, right. You look at it, right?
Because there's a screen
there.
Yes,
that's correct.
And the wavelength of that energy is big enough that it doesn't fit through those holes. So if it doesn't fit through a hole in your microwave oven, how is it going to fit through 12 to 14 miles of Nepali mountains? You just physically can't do it. So
okay.
I will defer to other scientists.
I can see nodding going on. We'll probably talk a little bit more deeply about that in a bit. But, okay, so I'm just kind of going down through a hit list here.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate your being in here. I have, and this resonates with me, deployment of weaponry is essentially a war on the ocean itself. So when we're doing things like RIMPAC, we're putting out some live ordinances, right?
Correct. Now, the planning process for RIMPAC 2016 is still ongoing, but it'll probably be similar to past RIMPACs, and there will be deployment of ordnance in the water as part of the training in that exercise. That is absolutely correct.
And what kind of ordinances get deployed in the water? Like big missiles? Like what? You are, in fact, we don't even have to pretend. You're talking to a military novice.
Yep, that's fine. So
what kind of missiles come out of those?
We will use RIMPAC 2014 as an example. So during RIMPAC 2014, not only the United States, but our allied partners that participate in the Rim of the Pacific exercise, to include places like France and Norway. So show me where they touch the Pacific on a globe if
right.
you can.
But just the Arctic Ocean, maybe?
Can't.
Okay, yeah, I got to think about that. Norway. No, they couldn't. All right, go on.
But it just talks about the importance of building those partnerships because it's we're all connected by the oceans, not separated by them. So we shot forms of the Harpoon missile with telemetry. So no explosives, but we did also drop general purpose bombs on the hulks, et cetera.
Now, hulks are boats?
Yeah, ex-U.S. Navy ships are approved for sinking and then prepared for sinking. You remove all petroleum products, hazardous materials, et cetera, and then you seal them up. And there's a couple different reasons that you would do this during an exercise. One is to actually go end-to-end on your training, and I'll explain why training, I think, has to happen. You can't do everything simulation, but there's a side benefit to things like this, and that's when you design something, you never really get to test it to its full specification in the military unless there's conflict. So you can learn things from these exercises when you deploy live ordnance on these hulks. They can then put into the current ships to make them safer, et cetera, which I'm all for, having been on the ship and spent many years of my life. Now, you can do a lot of things in simulation and computer-based training, but there's no substitute for the actual real live application of the things that you've been trained to do. And living on Kauai kind of highlights some of that. If you were to only train how to drive your car in a simulator, and then the first time I put your rail in a vehicle was in L.A. during rush hour, would you feel comfortable?
Right. And even driving here, I get somebody to pick me up at the airport and drive me around there. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. We have a show on the Navy's environmental impact statement. Speaking at the mic right now is Pacific Missile Range Commander Bruce Hay. Facility Commander Bruce Hay. And we have a number of other people in the studio, and pretty soon they will begin to start speaking about their concerns. But thank you, Commander Hay. So that's an element. And I think other people are perhaps callers, and I thank the callers who are listening right now and allowing you to really be able to share these stories. Eventually, they will call in on 826-7771. Another element that has been called to my attention to ask you about: people are concerned about aerial spraying from planes coming from what seems like the Northwest Hawaiian Island area that leave persistent and seemingly unnatural clouds that develop over the course of the day in their wake. And almost all of us have seen that. That's happening. And we don't normally have that many planes come by, but, you know, there'll be one plane that leaves a big, long, persistent wake, and then maybe other planes, not the planes go by too much, don't do that. So, yes, they could be at different layers of the stratosphere, but it's a relatively consistent problem, and people are worried that there is aluminum and barium and different things in that, perhaps to be using to shield the base from satellite. I've seen even on the regular news that they'll go, well, it looks like there's clouds over here, but that's really what we call military chaff. And so any mana'o on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not an expert on
Aerosol spraying. Also known as geoengineering, and the colloquial term can be chemtrails.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you look it up on the internet under aerosol spraying or geoengineering, there's actually a tremendous amount of science and locations of companies that,
absolutely,
that do that.
So, but I will mention one thing. It's contrails, which sounds alarmingly similar. A natural phenomenon caused by airplanes at various altitudes due to the effects of humidity and pressure. Fighter aircraft actually have detectors to see if they're creating these because of the atmospheric conditions, and something we brief because you don't need radar or any fancy tools when you see an airplane that's creating contrails. Again, a natural occurring effect of airplanes in the atmosphere due to pressure and humidity. What you're talking about, I have absolutely no knowledge of, and it's not something that we do at the Pacific Missile Range facility, or I have no awareness of us doing that in the government or military.
I'll send you some links, and those come there. Usually it says geoengineering, and I know Evergreen Aviation that they've changed their name a little bit now, but they did work for the U.S. government.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know who flies at the base, who's scheduled to fly at the base. And, again, my 14-month-old daughter lives in my house on the base, who I hold dearer than anything in this natural world. And I'm not going to expose my daughter to something just because it's part of my paycheck. So
And would you know, I mean, is it in your purview? You might not be able to say, but would you know what is being, if there are, you would know if the Navy has ships out there in Papahanaumokuakea in that Marine Reserve that would be launching these planes. That would be something in your awareness?
No, but we don't have anything that launches airplanes other than an aircraft carrier. Again, I've flown in every variant of airplane that we currently have in inventory, to include helicopters, and none of them have anything even remotely close to what you're talking about. So,
okay.
Again, it sounds awesome on the Internet, but in reality, especially at PMRF, it just doesn't exist. So,
okay, and then I'm just going to read out some of these other things that have come.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I want to let some of the other speakers be able to maybe weigh in. I know John might have some thoughts on this, and then I want to have my citizens who are here that I think their questions would be representative of what other people have. So I've gotten things coming to me saying fishermen feel pushed out of the water, in which the goal is more about keeping them out of the ocean than protecting the fish or the seals or the wildlife. That is something, and I have a fisherman in here, he might be able to bounce on that. Concern about rat poisoning on smaller islands making it into the food chain and contaminating the ecosystem. Lack of respect for and access to Hawaiian culturally significant sites. And then I've also heard and been sent some things about insincere maps on the documentations regarding sonar, demonstrating where the sonar is not used rather than where it's being used. So,
well, I think we already answered that question. I gave you the charts to show specifically at PMRF. But, all these concerns, far exceed what the goal of the EIS is, but I highly encourage people, obviously, to bring up their concerns in these in the website that I gave you. It's extremely easy to do so.
Mm-hmm. And environmental impact statement is what EIS means, and so people could look at HSTT, like Hawaii's Southern California Training and Testing, HSTT EIS, Environmental Impact Statement, HSTTEIS.com. And okay, I forgot I had one other kind of overarching thought. But,
yeah, absolutely. Sorry to sidetrack you there.
No, you didn't. Yeah, I appreciate what you're having to say. John, I want to pull you up to the microphone here because I see you've got a pile of papers in front of you. You look very organized. What do you have to share?
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Felicia. It's interesting to listen to the conversation. And knowing that there's so many people out there that we cannot see, but I can hear them in my mind's eye thinking, are these guys really interested in what we have to say and what we want to tell them about what we're doing, and do we really want to hear their feedback? And that's the most important part of this process. And the reason we went to the trouble to do the scoping meetings is to get people to come forward and explain their concerns. And we heard those concerns, but a lot of people apparently didn't realize they could express those concerns because they didn't know about the meeting. And we'll talk about how to find out where the meetings are. But the thing that's important to me is to go to some of the specific questions that are concerns. One of them is about the fishing areas being closed. We are not, between the captain and I, are not aware of areas being closed by the Navy except when we have to secure a ground hazard area around the base for a number of hours for a launch of a missile for a test. That is a very temporary condition. We have people walking on the beach and fishing along the beach of Barking Sands, and I brought with me the applications for beach access if anyone's interested. I'll leave them here in the studio if you have people on this side who would like to have them. But the point is, you can have beach access, and you can fish from the beach, and you can fish from the ocean in front of the beach, and you can fish all over the range. It's just at certain times when the area is closed off because there's a military activity that's dangerous for public health and safety.
Which we publicize on our command Facebook page, our command website, an even deeper, nasalier voice on the radio station you've heard, calls out 30 days prior to call in for the status of the beaches, in addition to all the other things. And it isn't just test for missiles. On the 3rd of November, when we launched Super Stripey, which is a satellite program for Office of Responsive Space, University of Hawaii and Sandia National Labs, we instituted the same program. There were people on the beach, but only for a few minutes before and after the launch. Again, public safety is more important than the exact time that we launch some of those things. So that's why those people are out there.
Oh, I guess we have a caller. And then we'll come back to you, John. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going there, Felicia?
Good.
Okay, hey, how's it going there, John? Maybe you talk to me here at the meeting at Island School.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you did, but whatever. Okay, but I would like to kind of address with, like what you just did say, that you guys invite people to come, but in actuality, we gotta pay for going on the beach. We gotta pay $25. Plus on top of that, you guys gonna background check us first.
We have to do that by the law. It's not something that we decided to do. But it's not a call that we can make.
Way back when, my grandmother, my grandfather, my father, my mother, we all used to go camping over there. No Healy, Barking Sands, Winty. Okay.
Understood.
No can.
I understand your concern.
You know, and as for the turtles, yeah, the turtles been there for many, many years already. Okay, by no Healy, yeah? They come up to that opening.
Correct.
So, you know, I understand what you guys are saying. Okay? I can hear you guys on the radio. I heard you guys even at the meeting. But, and then I'd like to bring up this one other point that if you guys gotta get one permit from the government, which is you guys, to harass, But I actually said that you guys to kill, but the word was harass. But like I said at the meeting, if we was to do that, we would be in jail. We'd be in jail. So, I don't know, the government is with the government always, and it seems like in actuality, we is the government. We're supposed to be the government, but it seems like the government is the government. And we is just a little bit of peon that the government can step on every time.
So thank you for sharing
that. That's my opinion, yeah?
Yeah.
I got no problem saying my name also. My name is Clayton Kubo, Waimea Kauai. Okay? Been here all my life. All my life. And I see the changes. I see the changes. I was one of the first guys that had complained when the commander went come and say, no, nobody can come on the base already. I was one of the first. So, hey, by the way, have a beautiful, beautiful evening.
Thank you so much for
Aloha.
Calling. Aloha.
Thank you.
So, John, you were speaking.
Yeah, I wanted to get back to the issue that why we're doing what we are trying to do here and get the comments in from folks so they will tell us what our concerns are. Like the last caller has said, he expressed his opinion, which is fine, and we have no problem with that. But if we can look at something that is doable within our power, that's what we really need to hear from. We can't change the rules that come from the federal government to top levels. Now, I would like to speak to the documents here on sonar. I thought this is going to come out, and I wanted to put a perspective on sound levels because there is a lot of disinformation out there on what sonar sounds like. Now, we are not whales, so we can't hear what the whales hear, but we can measure the sound pressure levels that they are exposed to. And sound in the water does not compare in decibel levels to sound in the air. There's a difference of 62.5 units of decibels between sound in the water and sound in the air. And I'll put this in comparison with a chart, and this is available anywhere on the internet when you look at sound in the water and sound in the air. A sonar dome operating at 175 decibels in the water at 1,000 yards away from the front end of the operating end of a sonar on the nose of a ship is equivalent to 113 decibels in the air, which is a disco or a rock concert. That gives you some relative idea. That's 1,000 yards away.
Okay.
And that puts it in some perspective. And when we have whales within certain distances, we have power down. The skipper explained about something called PMAP, Protective Measures and Protocols, and that requires turning down the sound level so that when they're in those ranges, it's even turned down lower. But this is not something that's going 1,000 miles out there, and it's not 10,000 times louder than a Saturn rocket. It's not even comparable. Those are outrageous claims that just need to be understood, that the real sound is much more in the concept of what we can understand at 113 decibels or a rock concert is what a whale would be hearing if we were a whale.
And you are listening to John Berger. He's an environmental scientist. Is that correct? Would that be the right term from the Pacific Missile Range Facility? This is Felicia on Kauai Soapbox. I will take one more call, but then I really want to make sure to allow my guests in the studio that are going to be able to really surface a lot of concerns. So we will take a quick call, and then... Aloha, this is Felicia.
You know, with all due respect, sounds from the air and sounds from under the ocean are different. And regardless of what decibels you're quoting to the public to justify that you're not causing harm to marine animals, I'm not interested in, a lot of people aren't interested in, because the sounds from under the ocean are causing whales and animals to wash up on shore, bleeding from their eardrums. Sounds from the air don't do that. So I'm not sure what you're driving at. Nothing but sonar could do that to the animals. And another thing that isn't unreasonable, you took that PMRF beach under false pretenses. You stole another beach in Hawaii for your war games. Right after 911, you take that beach, and you tell everybody that they're afraid, you're afraid somebody's going to be swimming in on a surfboard with a bomb. I mean, that's just downright insulting, to say the least.
So thank you, caller. And then, you know, what we are understanding is it's the federal government who makes these choices and not the individuals, but you're bringing up really good concerns. So I will see if they have a response to that.
The concern is illegal occupation. They need to get the hell out, period.
Okay, thank you. No cussing on the air. Thank you. Do you guys have response on that?
Absolutely. And I understand after living here, you know, the beaches are beautiful and this is a special place. But ultimately, it's a military base. And PMRF is one of the very few bases in the nation where you can get a pass to come on. So that's extremely unusual. And I understand what it was like before 9/11, but a lot of things have changed post 9/11, and we're never going to be able to go back as much as I would like to. So I heard the caller's frustration about paying $25 for a background check. I hear you, sir, but ultimately that's the cost of us doing something that allows us to keep the base as open as possible. And I hear you. But it's a military base, and we're going to follow the federal rules. I don't really get it. Actually, I don't get a chance to pick and choose which rules I follow. And it says I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And that includes protect marine mammals while I'm training. It includes, you know, making sure that we could go on and on. So, again, I hear the frustration. I acknowledge it. And I'd love to tell you something you want to hear, but I can't. It's a military base. And that's going to be a military base. And the best compromise I can give you is to go to Great Life Hawaii and fill out a application and then come and enjoy Majors Bay and shenanigans, et cetera.
Okay, and I'm getting all kinds of texts right now, and I can see that callers are wanting to come on the air, and there's a lot of people still in here that have something really strong to say. I can tell also that I've got listeners from around the islands and quite a bit going on. Okay, the person who's holding is going to need to hold for just a little bit. John, do you have any kind of summary? We'll take a call between you and Stephen, the fisherman, but I would like to let the fisherman call in. I do want to say that I have had a couple people text me to the effect that they really do want to hear what you guys have to say. So do you have a a little bit of a summary. We can come back to you in a bit, but I'll take the call and go on to Stephen, the fisherman.
Oh, yes, I would like to address that one issue about bleeding from the various parts of
Please.
The body. What I don't know, most people don't realize this, but because of the nature of the structure of the body of marine mammals, when they come out and they strand on the beach or they're on the beach resting where they shouldn't obviously be because they're out of the water, it's because they're having breathing problems or other issues, and if they don't swim well when they're very, very sick or ill. So when they're out there, and they ultimately will, if they're not bleeding when they arrive there, if they do pass on the beach, what happens is the membranes, because they're used to being in the equalizing pressure, the water divers know this, those little mucous membranes start to rupture and blood will come out of different openings around the eyes and around the nose. And I've seen this with monk seals that I've responded to on other parts of the island. If they're sitting there for an overnight, for example, and no one discovers that animal, it will have bleeding from those orifices within a very short period of time. And it looks like they got ruptured from sound in the water. And it's a course of the marine mammal dying in a normal decomposition. It happens very quickly.
Okay, thank you for that. And I appreciate that there's so many people who have a big heart for this. We have a caller holding. We're going to take that call quickly. And then, Stephen, I'm going to have you speak as a fisherman. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question for the gentleman from PMRF. Is being that it is well established that the U.S. military is illegally occupying Hawaii, I'm just wondering how these guys in good conscience can work for the U.S. military in a place that has been stolen and overthrown and recognized as such. So, I mean, that's what I'm wondering is how can you guys be there, period, when it's an illegal occupation. How do you feel about that?
Okay, thank you. And we'll take that answer off the air, okay? I mean,
thanks.
I'm going to... Okay, thank you. Do either one of you have a comment on that?
That, you know, I said at the beginning of the show, I'm not an expert in everything, and the time frame the gentleman's referring to is 1893 to 1898. That's something for the courts. You know, on the 21st August, 1959, Hawaii was recognized as a 50th state. If the people have those legitimate concerns, they need to address that with their legislators.
Right. And from this show, I have had profound comments of that effect, and so I have done a lot of studying on it. And, you know, I'm gonna give the caller the credit that they're really is some legitimacy issues that are asked there, and then the way I tend to move forward is there's a dual reality. Yes, perhaps that what happened wasn't right and that needs to be addressed at the courts and stuff, and it is the case that the United States government, whether that was righteous or not, is here, and so we can look at that duality. I can respect both sides of the argument, but it's hard to really move away from the fact that the United States is here, and for whatever happened, these bases are where they are. And the Pacific Missile Range facility in general is a test and training place more than any kind of, it's not like it's an aggressive spot.
No, our legacy dates back to the Second World War when it was Barking Sands Air Force Base and then Bonham Air Force Base, and ultimately the Navy took ownership after the Air Force essentially gave up. And our legacy is test and evaluation, but the majority of our business is actually training. We just are most well known for the high-profile test stuff that we do, to include a program called Low Density Supersonic Decelerator. It's part of the Mars Rover program that was here for 2 years. And the goal is to figure out how to get heavier payloads into Mars. And then, as I alluded to on the 3rd of November, we an hour the Guinness World Record, not confirmed, record holder for the largest rail-launched rocket. That was the Super Strike B robot that was ultimately designed to put the Haka Sat, which was a college student-built satellite, into orbit. But the vehicle failed about a minute into the flight, which is unfortunate. But overwhelming majority of the business there is training.
Thank you so much. So, Stephen Doy, thank you for coming up from Hanapepe.
Thank you, Felicia.
And so, share your mana'o.
Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank the radio station and you folks for allowing me to come and speak. These are my personal views. Second, I would also like to thank Commander Hay and all the servicemen and women who served in our military. This allows us to have freedom of speech. Also, I'd like to thank the radio station for allowing us to voice our concerns. And everybody has the right to their opinion. And you folks allow us the right, whether we like it or not, you know, as viewers. Most recently, you know, I'm sorry, I'm going to be reading off something that I've written. And after that, I'm going to be presenting articles that I have. Most recently, I've given testimony on NOAA's proposed whale sanctuary expansion for the Hawaiian Islands. I am opposed to the expansion, and these are the reasons I'm about to present to you, the listeners. I have an article here in the Guardian Island, dated November 5th, 2015. Dolphin death probe, Navy ships use sonar in area. You guys can, you know, check that out later on. I have also an article, and this is dated, I'm going to tell you guys the dates. CNN. I tend to believe CNN. It's dated 2008. A federal judge ruled it was constitutional suspect for President Bush to issue a national security exemption, so no EIS was carried out. They lost that. Okay, in the courts, that was lost. The Navy was also quoted as saying, the Navy says the courts are protecting sea creatures rather than people. You know, again, I'm not against the Navy and their training because they protect us, but I'm trying to tie everything in with what I have to say at the end. NOAA, there's a couple of branches of NOAA, and NOAA fisheries, I think a lot of you don't know, are the ones that issue the permits to the Navy to conduct training, military training in the waters, you know, off of Hawaii, California, wherever it is. The Navy insists it needs powerful active sonar technology to detect quiet modern diesel electric submarines operated by potential U.S. adversaries. Okay, that's CNN. Associated Press, also most recent, 2013. The Navy is expected to ramp up its sonar and underwater explosive training in the waters of Southern California and Hawaii beginning next year as the world war in Afghanistan winds down and the military shifts its focus to the Pacific. Reading more into it. The Navy has estimated 130 marine mammals could die and another 1,600 could suffer hearing loss during the training program, which plans annually for more than 50,000 underwater explosions and more than 10,000 hours of high-intensity sonar use. Okay. So I just keep going down. Sorry. What I'm going to present to you right now is what I have in front of me is the Hawaii Range Complex Training Manual for 2008. And under the training manual, it says that air-to-ground gunnery exercise, Kaula, a small island southwest of Kauai, is used for air-to-ground gunnery training. Air-to-ground GunX includes live-fired gunnery training from fixed or rotary wing aircraft. The use of 20-millimeter and 30-millimeter cannon fire is not allowed from November through May. It's pretty funny because I fished there. I've been there November through May, and there's birds all through the years. The birds don't go away over there. Live gunnery rounds will be fired at land targets during this training event. There were 16 for Kaula and Poakoloa training area. But this is 2008. Also, there's a direct energy. There's future activities at the base. They have developed a future high-energy laser test. I've talked to Commander here, and he's informed me that all of the laser testing is done above the water, as far as I know.
And he's nodding his head.
Yes. There's also an advanced hypersonic weapon, and I believe these are missiles that fly, you know,
nodding
interceptors. Okay. But these are the training that are going on that people don't know. You know, and keep in mind, remember that NOAA is the guys that issues the permits. Maybe not the land training, but anything on the water. Okay, especially in the sanctuary areas.
And that's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Correct.
You're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Fisherman Stephen Doy is speaking to the commander and environmental resource specialist from Pacific Missile Range Facility. Continue.
I went to the scoping meeting, and I was really upset that it was an article posted that Wednesday, I believe it was, a small little article on Guardian Island for the meeting that night, and there was only one on Kauai. So often, you know, when people do these meetings, they put a small article. I guess it's by law. You got to put it in for the public. They do it for that day and that night. A lot of people don't know about it. I have some of their brochures, materials that was given out, and a lot of these pictures, it states that NOAA permit number. So right there it says that NOAA gives them permits to do it. Okay. So, you know, NOAA structure, basically they work out of Department of Commerce. And under their chief of staff, they have six branches. And under the military branch, there's two representatives. And other than that, other than the rest of the five other branches, there's only a representative. There's only one representative. You know, and I just kind of understand why they need one from the military and one from the Navy. Well, I'm sorry, Air Force. NOAA is also taking the humpback whale off the endangered list. You know, I wonder why they want to do an expansion. Because first of all, there are basically three major stocks of humpback whales. The eastern stock, I think we know. The summers in California, winters in Mexico. The central stock, which is the one that's come here. The summer in Alaska where they feed. They migrate for 6 to 8 weeks. Come to Hawaii where they mate, give birth, and raise their calves. Then there's the western stocks, where these one, they go to Aleutian Islands in the winter, and then they go to the islands south of Japan, where they're, we all know, where the Japan fleet claim to hunt them for research. You know? Our whales are smarter, I think, but I'm not, you know, whales are real smart. You know, I try to make fun of it, but This is important things. Why, you know, we should be going after the Japanese government if you like the whales. You know, we don't, what the fishermen are worried about is expanding the sanctuary. And under the federal registry, we still want to change it to a national ecosystem. It encompasses everything dead or alive. And they want to do it from the high water mark out to 3 miles. Okay? This is all state-owned land already. We don't want the federal government to come in and take over our lands. It's going to take an act of Congress, once it's in place, to remove it. And you know how hard that is. Okay? I have a 9-page letter from Keith Robinson. This is to Westpac. And Westpac is the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council.
So are you going to summarize what the letter, the
essence
of the letter?
Yes, I'm going to summarize. I'm going to read statements that he's made, because I think Kauai fishermen as a whole would be very upset. He calls us environmental rapists. I'm going to read something. Therefore, the Kauai fishermen raped and devastated the neighboring Waimea River, choking it with so many gill nets that I frankly was somewhat amazed that even the river water itself was able to flow to the sea. I mean, these guys, I don't know. It's pretty bad. And I have this, I'll give one to Felicia if you guys want to read it. If the Kauai fishermen want to destroy their own shoreline and nearshore fisheries, which they have done, that, in my opinion, is their own business. You know, I know, Felicia, we need to be better stewards of our lands. Mm. You know, everybody needs to be.
Right.
We need to take responsibility.
Everybody.
Everybody, yeah. And going down into the letter, there would, however, be one exception to this up at Lihua Island. He doesn't want Lihua Island controlled by the state. He basically wanted, when he wrote this letter, he wanted a boundary so nobody can fish within his area, his land. And excluding Lihua, I wonder why. It's because did military does training exercise on that island? No. You know? Commander Hayes shaking his head, but
Steve, let's correct that. This is John. The military does not do any training exercises on Lihua.
So that
they do not train on Lihua, period.
Okay, so
And I want to tell the listener who might not know this, Keith Robinson is one of the owners of Ni'ihau. It's an island in the Hawaiian chain south west of Kauai that is privately owned.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll go back. Well, I just was reading off of the rain complex training.
Not okay, yeah, the Robinson family through Ni'ihau Ranch does support two sites with optics and surface search radar, and they have entertained in the past terrain overflights for marine aviation, some evasion training, but nothing in
so
our time frame in Lihua.
But the document I have, you guys' training manual is wrong.
That's from 2008.
Yes,
correct.
But so you folks never did, you said.
On Lihua.
Yeah.
Put your on mouth Lihua. To the on mic. Lihua.
On Lihua. Let me see the document that says we train on Lihua.
And as he's looking at that, I'm going to take a caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, can you hear my radio? I forgot to turn it off.
Please turn it off.
Okay. All right.
What's your question?
I want to say something. Oh, well, okay. I'm late. Okay. It's because of capitalism.
Oops.
That's
can you
the whole entire problem.
Go, Laura.
Capitalist.
Yeah, sorry.
The capitalist system is causing this problem. And we already have the GMO corporate tools of capitalism poisoning our soil and fish. The last thing our sacred Paradise Island needs is the military, with its bloated budget from the capitalist killing machine, allowing them to test the military system to test anything like bombs in the water or tests on land that pollute and destroy the planet. That's our Mother Nature. Capitalism does not protect the commons. It's the system.
Thank you.
And you can change the system with education. That's why I called, to educate the people that we need to form a revolution to save our planet from this industrialized military killing machine. This military is sociopathic. Capitalism is sociopathic. It's causing us to become sociopaths just to survive in the system.
Thank you.
We must have a commons and protect our nature.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's a recurring theme, you know, is that you know, our economic system is founded on exploiting natural resources. Yes?
Yeah, Felicia, you know, I made a mistake.
Okay.
And I apologize. Apologize to the military. Apologize to you, John. It's not Lihua. It's Kaula.
Okay.
That's an island 19 miles away.
Okay,
but
I'm getting affirmations from the military people here, yes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. But, you know, I take offense when somebody's next to me and he's all upset. And when you folks was talking, I was really nice and things like that, but I can see your anger to me. There's no, you know, I respect what you folks say. I respect what folks you do in the military. You guys should respect me too. And people make mistakes.
So thank you for clearing that.
I apologize to you, Steve.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, I'm going to take a tiny little break because I need to say Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Okay, so Stephen, carry on.
Okay, Felicia. You know, almost done right now.
Well, I appreciate your mana'o.
And all I want to say is I have concerns with contracts being given out to from the Navy to the Robbins family. This is not facts. This is just rumors I've heard. But what I do have fact is, in the total Niihau federal contracts in money space from 1995. To 2013, $15,159,973.47. In front of me, I have all of the contracts that was paid out for these years to the Robinson family. Okay? They say the island is not making money. 2013, $1 million. 2012, almost $690,000. You know, almost $1 million from 2005. There was rumors that are coming off the island that when the contract is given, the Robinson family, this we know for a fact, that the work done on the island, the labor work, not the more, you know, installing of equipment and things, but the groundwork, the footwork, has to be done by their workers. And I believe that, I don't know, Commander Hay can comment on this. Anytime you do government work, you get paid the Davis-Bacon, which is a higher salary.
Is that correct?
Davis-Bacon is a contract modifier. The current contract does not include Davis-Bacon, but the basis of your comment is correct. When you pay for services, it's supposed to go to the employees. That's absolutely correct. So, but I don't want us to get tied up on that modifier of Dave and Bacon. That's a contract vehicle that isn't part of the Niihau contract that we have right now, but we do pay for services on the island to maintain equipment over there, bring fuel over, et cetera, et cetera. That's absolutely correct. And those numbers sound very close. I don't have, you know, every contract we've ever let, but that's pretty close.
So, Commander, all I wanted to reemphasize, so when they do work for you folks, for the military, they don't get paid the Davis-Bacon wages?
They get paid per the contract. Davis-Bacon, again, is a type of contract vehicle. It's not in their contract right now.
Okay.
So after your comment the other day, I actually talked to the Niihau Ranch and brought up your concerns because I told you I'd do it, and I'm a man of my word. So so they have your concern, and you know, there's ways to contact them if you wanted to pursue that further. But you know, we have ways of validating, and the Robinsons have been a great supporter of the military, been recognized by Secretary Rumsfeld, et cetera. It's a great relationship. And one we plan on continuing. So, but again, I talked to them, and I encourage you to do so as well if you still have concerns.
Okay, no, you answered my question. You know, like Felicia, in summary, all I wanted to say was I don't think we need a federal government to do an expansion
For the marine sanctuary.
For the marine sanctuary, it's because the whales are doing great in Hawaii. Fishermen have coexisted with the whales ever since I was born. Ever since I've been fishing. We don't bother the whales. The whales don't bother us. We don't eat the whales. We don't harass the whales. You know, they don't eat when they come down here. So they don't take our fish. I don't want the federal government to do more expansion and telling us what we want, what we can and we cannot do. We already have the state that doing that.
I will say that we've done a couple of shows and had people that are concerned, and we've had Noah on here, and there seems to be an overwhelming amount of different interest groups that have the same concern as you. NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is different than the military. I have two callers that have been holding for a while. I'd like to give them both a brief moment. Then we're going to go to Terry Lilly. I want to give him some time to be bringing up some stuff. And then Kalasara and Golden Eagle. No. Michaela, I know. I want to say McCullough, but it's Michaela. Okay, so we've got... Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Okay, hi. So I'll try and make this as quick as I can. I haven't seen the EIS, but there was another EIS that came out, and there was a 504 a few years back with a Kaneohe Marine Base on a Striker Force in which you guys were going to be collaborating with the Striker Force, and which was going to be stationed out of Kaneohe Marine Base and refueling for them as they did bombing runs or target fire at Taula Island. As far as I know, it's a bird sanctuary. I've been out there quite a bit and been in the witnessed the live fire, and I've seen live fire large bombs that have hit that place close enough to see the reactions from the wildlife, and it's pretty incredible. I didn't even realize there were that many birds that were on that island. It was an hour or so before dusk, and the birds were coming back to roost, and there must have been 100,000 birds on the water not knowing what the hell to do after those bombs had rained down on that island, and it was pretty incredible. Now, in the last few years, I have seen a slowdown on the use of that range, at least when I'm there. I don't know if that's true or not, but just my observations. But this Striker Force program, which they're using the Ospreys and the H-1 helicopters, something like that, is set to be coming up. And my one question is that in the EIS presently that you guys are talking about now, this 1,000-2,000 page document, what was interesting with the Striker Forces, this Kaneohe Marine Base one that came with the 504, the EIS had very little, if nothing, on Kaula. They had comprehensive archaeological studies, all kinds of where all the toxic things were on at Kaneohe Marine Base and PMRF, but they had very little. In fact, the map of Kaula was a joke. Kaula was about the size of a pinhead on the EIS showing the whole Hawaiian Islands in this little dot that said Kaula.
And that was it. And they had very little on the, all they said was basically that they would be doing live fire, or not, yeah, they live fire, but it was going to be inert, fire, I guess is what, you know, the, I'm trying to find out, are you still planning on, being part of that? And is that still on? And is it in the EIS?
Okay. So let's let them answer.
So Kaloa, Rock, K-Rock is, we
Kalua.
Yeah,
Kaula.
Kaula, I'm sorry.
We call it K-Rock.
Okay, Kaula Rock.
It's an island. It's not a rock.
Absolutely.
But anyways.
Yeah. Its nickname is K-Rock for scheduling.
Right.
So the 150 acres on the southeast corner is used for inerts that's scheduled and controlled on Oahu by, I'm trying to remember what the acronym stands for, but that's not scheduled by PMRF, and the EIS that we're talking about, the Hawaii and Southern California training and test, is for waterborne ranges. It doesn't deal with the land. Although if you were to go to that website we mentioned earlier, you know, any of your comments, they'll be reviewed. So I encourage you to go to hstteis.com and make those comments and address your concerns.
Okay, caller.
Okay.
Do you have anything further?
Only other thing that I can say is that those bombs, when there was live fire, I don't know if live fire is ever going to be going on again, but the dolphins, the whales, they split. And that is a landing area for monk seals, which I've seen on the ledges over there. We've got false killer whales, sperm whales, many different types of marine mammals. And they are affected by those booms and those blasts because I've seen it many times. They leave. It's great because I'm able to fish. I actually, it's kind of a funny thing, but some of those, I don't want to be around those false killer whales and a lot of those porpoises. And they leave when you guys come. And, you know, hey, it's just it's an interesting thing. So I think it should be part of your EIS. And
what I'm hearing is it's, even though it's a workout to go in and take the effort, do go in and take the effort and make those comments about Kaula Rock and the testing there and whatever else your concerns are. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding. Hello? Are you still there? Okay. Terry, I would like to give you a chance to bring up your concerns.
Yep, thank you very much. And I'll be pretty quick on just doing a little bit of an update here. My opinion is that science is very good and that there's been very little science put into the environmental studies on the underwater reefs by the military base. And my goal here is to share with you folks some really good hardcore science and some facts right now, and I'll be very brief, and then ask you a couple questions. My goal is, though, simply that you will get together with us and our team of scientists and go over our scientific findings. So that's basically what I would like to hear at the end of the conversation here. So very, very quickly, over the last 5 years, I've spent over 1,500 hours underwater studying our marine life here. And Commander Bruce, I go prior to RIMPAC in 2013, I think I talked to you on the radio, and expressed my concerns about what the electromagnetic radiation out at the military base with the microwave antennas, the warships, and the towers is doing to our reefs. This is something that I feel is way more important than the sonar issue. Whales and dolphin actually can move around, thank goodness, but coral reefs cannot move around. So very quickly, since I last spoke to you on the radio, I've documented underwater. These are just facts, and I can show you all the movies and documentations. They've been verified by NOAA and UH and USGS. Since that time in 2013, I've documented several million corals dying and being fractured along the north shore of Kauai. I've documented 99% of the coral reefs at Mililii and Nualolo being killed from 2013 to 2014, right below the military microwave towers. I found dead whales on the beach, sharks, dead fish. All of this is within the range of the microwave towers, microwave antennas, and warships. Much of this has been completely reviewed by the scientific community. We've been trying to get this info through to you, but our team of scientists has been refused each time to have a meeting with you and or the base. We have a world-class research team, some of the best physicists on planet Earth, including a few Nobel Prize winners, that have researched the NASA data bank, and I have in my hot little hands right here the maps of your military microwave towers, how much electronics that you're using to run those towers, how much electronics you're using to power your offshore microwave antennas, and also some of the electricity and microwaves being used on the warships. What the research has shown, and it's actually, I've got a great article that you probably, even though you're, I know you're not an expert on electromagnetic radiation, I actually am, but what the research has shown is that the U.S. military had some of their brand new naval ships where the bottom of the ship completely corroded out. Matter of fact, they have a big beef with the shipbuilders in San Diego, and I have that article with me right here. The military was told by the shipbuilders that the bottom of the ships corroded out because of the massive amount of electronics being used on those ships. We also have the Royal British Navy, many PhDs, including very famous heart surgeons and scientists, that are showing that the military electronics, the amount being used out at the base, of which I have a full map of every watt right here, okay, so this is well-researched, that those electronics are grounding out onto the reef, creating an electrical current in the reef. Now, we have the top scientists on planet Earth that understand electrolysis, and they will tell you that when you add this kind of electronics, okay, to salt water, it creates electrolysis, and that corrodes metals. Well, the coral reef is made out of calcium, magnesium, other minerals, and metals. What I've shown through 1,000 hours of high-def video out at Mililit and Nualolo, that when you folks ramped up your electronics, that's exactly when I documented the entire reef dying, and the reef actually, not only all the corals died in the marine life, the reef is corroding and turning orange. We're actually studying that right now scientifically to show that this is an effect of the military electronics corroding the actual coral reef. These things are like radically important and I think way more dangerous than the ecosystem. Okay, the other thing too, just briefly, between, you talk about RIMPAC in 2014. Well, during 6/13 to 4/14, when the Navy ships were right off of tunnels, hundreds of thousands of corals were broken, diseased. I took video of 22 mangled turtles with their flippers that looked like they were blown off, dead sharks and fishes. I also had another quite unusual event while I was holding onto the reef very close to one of the military ships when I got electrocuted and had a heart attack. I was rushed to Luhuhi Hospital and pronounced dead. Well, I'm sitting here right now talking about this, so obviously I didn't die. But I have a vested interest in this issue as far as staying alive. Now, yeah.
I need to say, you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and this is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Right now, Marine researcher Terry Lilly is speaking with Pacific Missile Range Facility Commander Bruce Hay.
Now, Bruce and John, I respect you guys to no end, but frankly, I don't think you spend enough time under the water looking at the reefs, and I would like to offer that service in a kind, heartfelt way, at least get all the scientists together so we could figure out the problem. I don't believe you folks are doing this on purpose. I just don't think you actually know what's going on. The other thing, too, that I want to mention, and also talking to the gentleman over here about fishing, is Earth Justice in 2015 won a lawsuit against marine fisheries for not having the Navy walk through the proper permitting process. Now, also in 2015 is NOAA classified our entire coastline as critical habitat for the monk seal. Now, an EIS is normally a state-run type environmental study. What I feel legally needs to be done here, and I'll just ask you if you're doing it, under the Endangered Species Act, because it is now 100% illegal, even for the military, to alter in any way the habitat of the monk seal, which is our coral reef. We have ample amount of data to showing that that's probably the case. Now, are you folks out there in your EIS here and doing underwater reef studies and complying with the Habitat Conservation Plan under the Endangered Species Act?
Do you want to address each question individually, or do you
no,
want to just, go through your...
Just that one right now, and then I've got a couple other quick ones for you.
Okay, and then I do want to give him a good opportunity to respond to this. This is a whole train load of issues, so it is easy to sort of forget them as they're coming on, and I still want to allow...
What I had hoped for, Felicia, in the past, and I filed over 100 reports on this with NOAA and the EPA and the military, is that this really should be a week-long meeting with the military going over all this. So we're going over a lot of information quickly. So let me just summarize it in saying and asking, what reef studies are you doing in the current EIS, and are you also following the federal studies under the Endangered Species Act?
All right, so I'm going to call a friend here because.
Okay.
I said I was going to say this multiple times until you rolled your eyes at me, Felicia. I highly encourage you to bring up these concerns at hsteis.com so that, you know, you're obviously extremely passionate. I appreciate that. Please put that into words so that people other than us and the listeners can, review those. So for the specifics of the Endangered Species Act, I'm going to let Mr. Berger address some of those.
Thank you, Skipper. Okay, the questions before us right now is whether or not the U.S. Navy's environmental impact statement process is going to be addressing the concerns that Mr. Lilly has about reef decay and decomposition, black coral, black band disease, and other issues all related to the demise of the coral, and specifically the issue of microwaves in particular, I believe, is where the focus of this is going. And this has already been expressed quite strongly at our public scoping meeting about the Navy investigating those concerns. And that is on the agenda to be incorporated into the scoping meeting. So what you're asking for should be done with a great deal more detail. And if you could provide all that detail in the process of going on the website, that will do a great deal towards identifying exactly what your scientific concerns are. The Endangered Species Act right now, as far as we're, that is the reason that we are doing what we're doing right now. That whole process of this HSTT is focused on renewing the authorizations, the take authorizations under the Endangered Species Act, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and that's what we are doing. So it's a question of he's wanting to focus on a specific area, and that needs to be addressed.
And I'm hearing him to be saying, and Terry, you can correct me on this, but that what you are asking for is time at the table to just make an appointment and go and sit and show it, you know, to these people, because they might even be able to help you connect better with these. I am understanding he can put it on this EIS, but that might not get looked at for six months.
Felicia, put it this way. I'm alive right here, right now, kind of for a reason, okay? And I take that very seriously. I would think anyone probably would. But I was told in 2013, after filing hundreds of reports, that I was going and our professional team was going to get a meeting at the military base to talk about these issues, and we were adamantly turned down for that meeting. And I can show those letters from your press secretary, Bruce. Okay. I have those letters where they said, no way, we will not meet with you around these issues. And that was about 8 months ago. So all I'm doing, as honorable people, asking for your honor here, that these issues, we will have the place scientifically, peacefully, and lovingly to talk about these issues, show our science, and work with you folks for making a better world here on Kauai, and you still being able to do what you need to do.
Yeah. The only correspondence I've received was via LinkedIn, which is a professional networking site. One of your friends and colleagues, Mr. Simonson, contacted me in September of 2013 and asked to come out, and my conversation with him was, before we do meetings in my world, we share the briefing products in advance so that we can have a better dialogue, which Mr. Simonson was not willing to provide, and that was the end of it. And I've seen nor heard nothing else since in writing, email, telegram, smoke signals, anything like that. So either Menahuni are stealing all these letters or somebody else is turning them around, but nothing has come on my desk. You know, I'm Mr. Doy at a meeting randomly, and I addressed his concerns with the people, principals. So, I mean, I follow through on things if people do. So, again, Mr. Simonson elected not to share his briefing materials with us. That was his choice. I've not seen any materials that Mr. Lilly is saying, but, again,
it might not be going, getting through
well,
the right channel.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter, and I do respect what you're saying here. Obviously, if you're telling us the truth, then you didn't get the message, and if you didn't get the message, at least we're here right now, so we know that the message got through. And so I would like to get together with you. And also, too, I've got the document here from Tulsi Gabbard, our congresswoman, sent to Admiral Harris. Did you read this
one? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And it was, I think it was an article on this in the Garden Island.
In the paper, And so Tulsi Gabbard wrote on my behalf about RIMPAC harming the coral reefs and the turtles and all that because I showed her all of the videos and pictures. And then Admiral Harris responded back with this three-page letter saying how good environmental stewards the military is on the environment. But at the same time, Earth Justice sued the military for not following the environmental laws, and the judge said that the military was not following the environmental laws, the very same thing that I claimed that they weren't doing. But the admiral said back, we are following the environmental laws. So maybe we could get all of this clarified, exactly what these environmental laws. I used to teach environmental law. The guy who taught me and licensed me was Craig Potter. He wrote the Endangered Species Act. So I can tell you almost every one of the Supreme Court cases on the Endangered Species Act, including all of your cases, the military with the NRDC. And there's a big gap right here. There's a huge gap between the scientific community, the legal community, and the military. And what are these environmental laws? What studies are being done? I just want to close that gap so we can all do a better job at taking care of our island sustainably. So anyway, thank you for being here. And let's communicate, and that's all I can ask for.
I have a very anxious caller who's been waiting that wants to weigh in on this. And then also I have my whale people here who I want to allow them a moment to speak to. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Aloha.
Aloha. Can you briefly share what you're holding for? I mean, what you want to?
Okay, I'm going to go through them real fast, Alicia. There was discussion about exemption and sanctuary documents to the military. I want to state that that actually is in the sanctuary agreement that currently exists with the state. And if there is no new agreement, this exemption continues. There was also a discussion of the drone program. And, Commander, thank you so much for coming on. I really fully respect you for this. But I'm from the University of Alaska Fairbanks in my past. And Roe Bailey, the former commander of NORAD, was part of the drone program that would have involved Niihau, which was part of the reason that Niihau was trying to change its classification, because the FAA rules made it such that they had to be either an entity on their own, like a county, or somebody that was managed under another entity, such as a military. And they didn't succeed at any of that, but they tried. They really tried. So those numbers that Mr. Doy has, those are very real numbers. They're from the System of Advanced Management at the Government Accounting Office. Then I want to say that this drone program in Alaska has resulted in an expansion of Kohakaloa, and it's also causing major land reclassification in Alaska. So I really don't care for this approach. And then we're talking about EIS. Terry mentioned it's the state job. No, it's not. In EIS for endangered species must be conducted by the federal government. It is supposed to include economic studies. And we found that whales have been delisted, and the Holmu, which should be delisted, is not being delisted because of the geography of continuing to have Holmu that can be managed around the globe as an endangered species. So this is keeping people in Hawaii from exercising their traditional rights to harvest Holmu, even though the Holmu have reached a point where they're eliminating the limu. So, you know, I know this is not your fault, Commander, and I don't want to put that on you, but I do want to throw out that the Navy has a lot of acoustic data, and it's not just transponders, it's also transducers. You guys are receiving data from whales who speak to each other. You're receiving data from the species that are coming through the area that you monitor continually. And I'd really like to see a little bit more sharing about this kind of stuff, because you, according to people I've talked to there, you can identify individual pods and individuals within those pods. And this is if the Navy really wanted to participate in environmental correctness. Yes, they should be sharing that data. And I want to go back to Mr. Doi's point. Ka'ula Rock, which is called Ka'ula Rock in your documents, Ka'ula Island, is a bird sanctuary. There should be no target practice in places like that. So there are just these things that are going on in the military, where Governor Ige came by recently and said that they've approved participation in the drone program. What participation? I think, you know, we really need to scale back a little bit and think about more the fact that all of us have to be here together, and that the new west coast of the United States does not stretch from the Aleutians to Hawaii to Guam to Samoa to Philippines over to Okinawa. You know, the west coast of the United States is physically still the west coast of the United States. And don't put us in a position out here where we become part of an expansion of expectation on the part of the military. So I appreciate being able to talk. I don't know if you have time, you know, to respond, but
he wants to respond. So let him respond for a moment. It's kind of a really excellent segue into our whale friends that are here too, Kalasara and daughter. So
hi, Kalasara. Hi.
Okay, so, Commander?
Yeah, just real quick. I understand your frustration with us being the military and the Navy about sharing acoustic data, and there's a, and I'll explain why here in 1 second, and I'm not sure it requires more talk story to figure out how to solve this, but in upcoming training exercises, we're going to test something called the Integrated Autonomous Passive Acoustic Monitoring. It looks like a torpedo towing microphones, and it's going to be deployed during a training exercise before, during, and after, so that we can understand what the acoustic environment is before, during, and after this training exercise. And it's going to record all the sounds and those ranges that I indicated on that chart.
But would you also be recording, for instance, onboard sensors that would let you know about schools of fish and dolphins, et cetera, mammals in the area before and after?
That's not part of this study, but where I'm going with this is it will also involve acoustic information on submarines, which is highly classified. So there's got to be a way, and again, HSDT EIS, if you have this equipment used during training, how come you can't use it when you're not training? Please put those comments in if that's your concern. But
why
we can't share the data, and because it includes acoustic information on submarines, and that's something we obviously can't share. And
I worked in the Arctic for a very long time, and we found a way to get around that. So I strongly encourage you to find a way to share the incredible wealth of information that you have over there at PMRF, including you have more studies on the reef and reef fisheries, et cetera, than the state does. You need to share, and we need to figure out a way that we can do this.
And thank you, caller. I'm going to let these two men in the studio make a quick comment, but then I need to make sure Kalasara has her turn.
The Office of Naval Reserve. Just to answer a question really quick, and you may not even know this, the Office of Naval Reserve in Washington, D.C., and Scripps Institute and myself did a massive acoustic studies right outside of tunnels, and they have a lot of that data available. We're trying to get that where the Navy will release that information, or the Office of Naval Reserve right now. So there's a wealth of data that's already been done.
John?
Yeah. Caller, are you familiar with the Cascadia organization on the West Coast that does a lot of marine mammal research?
I think she's off the air.
Oh, okay. Well, at least at this point, I've just shared this with everybody in the listening audience. A great deal of marine mammal research is ongoing off the Pacific Missile Range and has been for a number of years, and there are a lot of publications out there on the web that have been released. So there's a lot more information out there that is really available if you go search for it, or at this point in time, you need to communicate with our public affairs officer.
Thank you. And Jazz with John will be coming up next, so we're coming towards our end point. I want to make sure that Micaiah and Golden Eagle and her mother, Kalasara, have a chance to share some of their perspective. So thank you for being patient on all of this. Tell them your name, and then you know where your interest is and what your concerns are. And your mom can jump in on this too.
My name is Micaiah. You also know me as the Golden Eagle. I'm just concerned because all the corals are dying.
Okay. And Kalasara, do you have any strong Wana'o coming from? It's called. What's your organization called?
Kohola Leo.
Okay, so do you have anything that you want to represent from them?
Well, my concern is when the first attempt at this EIS came out between California and Hawaii, it was my understanding that by law, each exercise had to have its own EIS. And this particular one, by grouping California and Hawaii together, was for exercises that hadn't even been planned yet. And I was wondering if it was even legal.
John or Bruce, do you have a response to that?
This is John. I'm not sure I understand the question, because we do this planning. Right now, this document we're preparing is for the future that will become effective starting in 2015. It's not for the present time. I'm sorry, 2018, and for that will become effective in 2019. So we're going through a process that won't complete on this HSTT until December of 2018 in the permitting process. So it starts early. Now, are you saying things were not done properly in the earlier EIS?
She says yes.
Yes.
And that was because they hadn't been planned yet?
You know, I don't know the details, but it was a whole new approach from the military to do a sweeping exercises all the way from Hawaii to California, including the whole half of the Pacific Ocean. And normally each areas have different, very different ecosystem needs and attention. And to group this whole diverse place into one environmental impact statement, it didn't seem legal in that what you were going to do here in Hawaii and what you do in California are slightly different, and wouldn't they need separate EISs?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't give you a legal answer on
that. I can give you one on that very quickly, because I know this all the way to the courts. First of all, you folks applied for the EIS to get a permit under the Marine Mammal Protection Act to have an incidental take permit to kill whales and dolphins, of which you did. Okay? That is, the whales and dolphins migrate and move all over the Pacific Ocean. The Endangered Species Act governs the turtles and the coral reefs. The local environment is governed by the Endangered Species Act, and no one can violate that law. You don't need an EIS. Not even the President of the United States can violate that law. So an EIS is not necessary. That's what the judge said in the Earth Justice lawsuit, is the military wasn't following the Endangered Species Act, and they had no permit for an incidental take to kill turtles and coral reefs, monk seals, so forth and so on. So there's a big legal confusion here.
Thank you. And I've got two more anxious callers. They're both going to be quick, and then we're each going to kind of give a final piece, and Jazz with John will come on. Between then and John, we're going to hear the county council report as well. So we just have a few more minutes. Aloha, thank you for holding. You've been very patient. You're on the air.
Is this me?
It is you.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a wonderful show. It's really fascinating to listen to. I want to send a huge thank you to Commander Bruce for coming up from the far west side of the island all the way up to the North Shore Studios. It's really wonderful. And for you to take time out of your day and graciously listen to the questions and concerns that people have is really impressive, and I think it says a lot for your personal integrity, so I really want to commend you. I have a question about the Kaula Island, Moku'o Kaula. I know for decades with Kaho'olawe over by Maui that the Hawaiian people were outraged that the military was bombing the island over and over and over again, training runs, training exercises. And my question for you, and forgive me if this is not PMRF specific kind of activity, but what are you training for? How does bombing an island get pilots better prepared for combat, except if they're trying to bomb islands? And are islands trying to attack us? So do you see my confusion?
Okay, so let's let him answer that real quick, and then we're going to take another call. So,
all right, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right, briefly, the initial issue we talked about is with the state of Hawaii now, who owns that island and the use of that. There's no Navy use of
Lehua or Kaula?
No, the eighth of the eight Hawaiian major islands. It's the one I can never
remember. Ni'ihau?
No.
Kaho'olawe?
Correct. So apologize.
That's all right.
I always name seven plus the ninth island, but that one always eludes me. So that's a state issue. The Navy has no part there. So K-Rock, which is south of Ni'ihau, is used for inert training. And, again, it's a end-to-end validation of your equipment, essentially. And that's why we only need inerts, so that when you actually have to use your equipment, you know it works. You can only do so much simulation, and it's a rock that's several hundred feet above the water or someplace else. So I get and I completely understand that people would prefer that we don't put inert or live ordnance anywhere, but again, that when the time matters, we need to know that that equipment works, and there's only one way to do that, and that's end-to-end from recognition of what you're shooting and then creating an action that makes something leave your airframe until it impacts. So you will never be able to simulate all of that. So,
And inert means it doesn't have anything live in it. You're
no.
basically throwing a rock or, you know, like an
it
inert
It looks exactly
object.
Like the real thing, but there's no warhead
there's
in it.
There's no warhead in it. Okay.
Felicia, I'd like to say one thing about this.
All right, we have one more caller.
And this is important about Kaula. Kaula is about 110 acres, and it's Kaula Island. That's a proper
mm-hmm.
name.
Yes.
Kaula Island. And the 10 acres at the southern tip is all that's used by the military for any kind of activity. The other remaining is all bird sanctuary. Obviously, the birds don't see a line in the sand that says don't cross over here.
Right.
And there's a consequence to that, but we're not using the whole island. 10 acres at the southern tip.
Okay. And, Stephen, real quick, and then we're kind of using up our aloha time because we have I have a caller who's waited for probably a half hour.
You know, everybody talk about Kaula and Ni'ihau, and I'm just going to read something from it's basically a Star Advertiser. Robinson family has stated that the Ni'ihau people who live there are legally our guests. That's what they call him in 1997. They're guests. They're not residents there. And under certain rules, foremost of which is a ban on speaking out against Robinson business activities on the island. They have no voice there. We all know that, you know. But now they call them their residents because it's a more proper term. It's 2015 now. But back in 1997, they're the guests. You know, I mean, that's absurd.
Thank you for sharing that. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you so much for holding patiently.
Thank you very much. It's an awesome program. I'll keep it short. Terry Lilly's information is the most vital information that's been shared today. Thank you so much for all the science. I would like to hear a commitment from Commander Hay and Mr. Berger that he will meet with Mr. Lilly and the scientists to go over these really important issues. I was at the scoping meetings for the entire time, and I was told in no uncertain terms that the military, the Navy, is open to all sources of science that's not just funded through the Navy. So I would like to see you stand on that word and have the meeting with Terry Lilly and his doctor friend and whoever else Terry thinks has the pertinent science that you need to go over. And I think other members of the public should be invited to that meeting. I would like to be included. Felicia has my contact information. As
can I say
Lilly.
Your name just so I can make sure I got
sure.
the right person?
Sure. This is Nina Monasevich.
And so you are part of the Citizens Advisory Committee that is managing some of this marine area.
Yeah, I'm speaking as a personal,
okay.
my own personal,
okay.
And the research that I've done for over 40 years on this particular topic. And Terry's information is critically important, and I'm kind of sad that there wasn't more of a response to that. So I think having a meeting is would really show some integrity on the Navy's part in walking their talk and what they're saying at the scoping meetings, and as far as being open to actually wanting to hear what we have to say. And the amount of information that Terry has collected is probably the most important pieces of information that is that anyone has.
Yeah, I'm going to hand him my business card for everybody here so that we don't have to worry about the Menahune stealing the letters or anything like that. So we can have a dialogue further. Again, we have one planet.
Right, so will that be an in-person meeting?
We'll leave that up to Mr. Lilly. He's got my contact information.
Yes, it will.
And we'll
Thank
figure
you.
It out from there.
Okay. Excellent.
And Terry, will you send him, and can you copy myself and Nina on it, the links that you're sending?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I want to really honor the commander and John Berger and Stephen Doy for coming up the other side. Everybody who has, you know, coming on the air is sticking your neck out. I appreciate it. I honor that the discussion has happened. And I really want to thank all of you for coming. And I really did feel, maybe I'm naive, but when I went to that scoping meeting, I felt like everyone in the room there actually cares quite a bit about.
We do.
Yeah, I had no lack of thought on that one, and in fact, I don't want to mention names, but I mean, a lot of them seem like they could be at a party in Moloa. You know, I mean, the yoga instructors and you know, juice enthusiasts. You know, it seemed like people who really actually do care about the environment. So. I realize, especially when I saw all these big grants that go out, like, that's where the money is the jobs come in under the military, and I value, even when watching this last Democrat debate, when you have the left of the left rattling sabers, it sounds like that we're on the edge of a war. Hopefully not. Okay, we're going to go around the room, thank you, goodbye kind of thing, and then we're on to the county council report and Jazz with John. I have no more time for more callers. Stephen?
Okay, I just want to thank the listeners for taking the time out to and express my concerns.
John?
Yeah, thank you very much to everybody that dialed in, called in, or listened in. We really appreciate your input on this. Thank you.
Bruce, in a couple years, my goal is to take your daughter, Obama's kids, and my granddaughter all out snorkeling along the Nepali coastline and show them a bunch of new baby corals.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having us on here. You know, we are proud of what we do, and we want to make sure that everybody understands that we care. I want to have a special shout-out to McKay, who sat all day here and only got to say a few words, 12 years old.
Ten. She looks
10.
12. Ten.
Ten. So concerned and involved. That's admirable. So, Mom, you're doing a great job.
And she's got to go snorkeling with us, too.
Yes.
Okay? So
Makaya and Kalasar, you want to say aloha?
Go ahead.
No. Thank you.
Have a nice day.
Okay. And this has been Kauai Soapbox with Felicia. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. Jazz with John is up next. And the county council report is probably pretty slim because there's no meeting. They get a holiday. So I think we're going to have 2 weeks off because they have Christmas and New Year's. So all of you, Merry, Merry, Merry Christmas.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of December 21st. There were no agendas on the council website for this week, so it looks like the council is taking time off for the holidays. These reports will resume when the council posts an agenda on their website. I want to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. To view meetings or meeting archives, visit www.kauai.gov/webcast-meetings. Aloha.
And you are listening to KKCR Honolulu.